Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show.
Hello and welcome to Entertainment Talk's season review for Fallout Season 1. I'm your, well, guest host, I guess, this week. I'm Dave from geektown.co.uk. I'm hosting this week because I know a little bit more about Fallout than Matt does. So, but I do have Matt here with me as well, and also Robert. So welcome to the review.
Hello.
Well, let's sort of start out. Obviously, we are here to talk about Fallout. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, to go to our rating system each, because what we thought we'd do with this, rather than writing one of the ratings for the overall review, we're each going to probably have different scores, so we've just titled it as review, which is something we usually don't do, but makes it interesting. I'm going to give this a don't skip rating, and if I were to pick a number, I'll go with an 8, like a high sort of don't skip. So this was like very, very good. Overall, I thought the series was good for the most part. There's some interesting choices certainly made. There's a lot of different ways to kind of tackle this from, so I'll just kind of go through some of them. From a like actual video game adaptation standpoint, it's pretty much perfect in terms of translating the game itself onto the screen, etc., etc. So it was really good from that standpoint. Because there's a bit of a difference, right, with like, okay, how good is this from an actual adaption, like bringing the game that you've got to the screen? And I thought we did a perfect job of that, like the look, the design, the feel of the world, all that sort of thing, translated it very well into live action. In terms of an actual TV show and the storylines, the characters, those sorts of things, I think it's fair to say, even though Walton Goggins' Ghoul isn't actually the main character, he absolutely destroyed every single scene he was in, completely stole the show, which is brilliant though. Like, because I've probably seen a bunch of stuff he's been in, but the thing I remember is from Sons of Anarchy a few years ago. But it's funny, I remember on Gaming Talk when we first started getting bits and pieces for the show, I remember Robert brought the news piece up that week and said, like, oh, Walton Goggins is playing a ghoul, and I thought, oh, sounds like a small little good role for a great actor to have, and he just completely took over the screen. Lucy's still brilliant as well, and obviously you've got Maximus, who is a really great character, so that was really good stuff. It's interesting, I'm going to compare this to 2 other adaptions that I think, one's on the high end and one's like a really big surprise. If we compare this to, let's say, Last of Us, which at the moment I think is the best video game adaption, that not only brought the game to life, in a like the game to screen translation was really brilliant, But also, I suppose the thing that does help that there is you've got a very clear story to follow. Okay, there was like bonus bits and pieces and things like that, and that did all that pretty much, excellently. And then if you go over to something like Twisted Metal, which is a 1 hour long destruction derby video game with barely any dialogue, barely any story, you just drive around and smash stuff. There's characters in there, there's like characters with names and things, but how they sort of dug into that series and like made a lot out of really, really very, very little, almost nothing. And then you come over here where it's like, okay, I know there's the Fallout games with their stories each and things like that. And just for reference, by the way, I think we should all say what we've played and stuff. I've only played Fallout 4. I did play it, finish all of it. Didn't play 3, didn't go anywhere near 76. And I'm looking to get New Vegas next. But 4's the only one, apart from Fallout Shelter, but that's like, hey, mobile game, you dabble in that for a little bit and things like that. Fallout Shelter
Yeah,
was
that
very
doesn't
good.
count.
Yeah. So just thought I'd mention that one as well. I found it to be, there were moments that were like, oh, that's a bit of a surprise. That was a little bit of a shock. But I never quite found myself invested in any quite type of way. Like, okay, if one of the big characters had died or something like that, that would have been like the way to do that. But there was nothing really, there wasn't really like any plot points or any kind of parts where I was shocked by like the change in the plot. There was like, shocking moments where, oh, someone gets shot in the chest and they backflip over a table, or there were bits like that. You had that kind of Mad Max-esque thing kind of going on, and there were some choices that did surprise me and things that I thought were very curious. But it's, I watched all the episodes. They're very good. I'm curious to see, like, because they've been renewed for season 2, what they're going to do with that and where they're going to take some of this stuff. But it just never quite grabbed me by the scruff of the neck, so to speak. But I thought it was still very good. I thought the performance was really good. But again, most of that is Walton Goggins really just taking the role by storm. Because one thing with these video game adaptations is like, okay, when you do look at Twisted Metal, first of all, it was like, okay, well, what are you going to do with this? Because there isn't really anything here. With Fallout, it was sort of, okay, there are stories in this in these games, but there's no sort of, there's no like main character of Fallout really. Whereas when you look at, let's say, The Last of Us, okay, we're adapting The Last of Us. Obviously, it's going to be Ellie and Joel, and you have a goal there to go through. So it was this sort of like in between thing for me in terms of what its goal was and sort of, because the main plot is really kind of one simple thing, and it followed through on that and did that well. And there were some other good side stories and things like that, but overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good, if not very, very good in certain parts. But that's my kind of initial thoughts.
Cool. Okay. Robert, what's your history with the game and what did you think of the show?
Well, my history of the game is fairly long. I did play the first couple. Three was a bit of a transitional shift because obviously you went down from that isometric top-down, almost like what we consider now an XCOM view to the first-person shooter, and then obviously introducing of the VAT system. As a review, I would definitely give it a don't skip. I mean, if you're a Fallout fan, you've already binged it like I did. I finished the whole thing in 2 days, and that's only because I had to work. Stupid work. I know Matt took longer, but Matt's, got 427 podcasts to do, so
Yes, of
he's
course.
his time is
Yes,
a little bit more limited. But even if you're not a Fallout fan, but just a fan of video games in general, I would definitely throw that into the don't skip just because they do such a good job of it. There's no Doom, if you remember that terrible rock Carl Urban movie Doom.
yes.
None of that is in there. And that was my only real fear. And Matt and I had discussed this on our gaming podcast a few times, and I said that this game has the easiest transition to live action because each game there's a new protagonist. So they don't have a Joel and Ellie. They don't have a Master Chief. They don't have a Sully that they have to have in there. They pretty much have carte blanche as long as they stay in the world. And there were a few canonical errors, but nothing like so egregious Like, the only one that was even really the big one is the town that they all referenced that Maximus was from was, like, 200 miles closer to where it was than it should have been. You know, a bit of a gaffe, but not the biggest hurt in the world. As for the only other game that I could think of that I actually enjoyed, and this is going to sound really, really weird, but did you ever see the Double Dragon movie?
No.
No, I don't think I did.
Early 90s, I have to look it up at IMDb. I mean, huge cast. Robert Patrick's in it. Alyssa Milano's in it. Scott Wolf is in it. But the reason why I liked it is because they did not take it seriously at all. This thing had all the seriousness of a Three Stooges marathon. Perfect case in point, it's, you know, post-apocalyptic world, and there's a gang based off of mailmen, you know, post-deliveries. And then one of the gang members tries to do this, you know, off-the-top rope dive bomb attack on the heroes, and they literally both just take one step back and let them go splat on the ground, and then just one looks at the other and says, I've never seen a mailman move that fast. It's camp, it's stupid, it's funny, and it's just one of those movies that if you don't want to have to deal with heavy plot, you just want to see slightly above average martial arts, a ton of tongue-in-cheek, and a lot of inside jokes. There's this one point where Alyssa Milano gets captured, and the big bad comes up to her and says, well, now who's the boss? Obviously, you know, referencing her early TV career. It's that level of, we know this is stupid, we're just having fun with it.
Yeah.
And outside of that, I mean, well, obviously Walter Goggins steals this, and I knew he was going to steal a show. If anybody has not seen him basically own a series, look up Justified.
Yes.
It's part of the FX network. And the only thing that I would give a heads up to for people outside the U.S. is it's very what I would call regionalized. And in that sense, you know, I'm American. Born here, lived here all my life, not had the chance yet to go to the U.K. Imagine like some weird world where I have to do a TV show based in Blackpool. You know, Google could probably get me about 90% of the way there. But there's that 10% that only the people that live there know. And they are very, very good. Justified was very, very good at nailing that other 10%. With all the little details for that region of Kentucky.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, the show's definitely a don't skip.
I didn't think we'd land on the same one for that, but...
Yeah, I mean, absolutely a don't skip for me. I mean, it's such a good adaptation. As you said, you know, the interesting thing when this was handed to them, I know Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy get a lot of the credit for this, but I mean, they were producers on it, which, you know, they weren't actually the showrunners or the writers for it. Graham Wagner and Geneva Robinson Dorett were the two, which is really interesting coupling in terms of the previous work they worked, because Graham, I think, worked on things like Portlandia and Silicon Valley, and you know, so he's got a history of shows which are slightly off kilter. And Geneva worked on I think she worked on the Dungeons and Dragons movie, but she wrote the Tomb Raider adaptation and the Captain Marvel film as well. So they both got kind of interesting backgrounds, and they were co-showrunners on it. So they were really the people in charge, and they definitely deserve some of the credit for this, because I think it is one of those things where you were talking about Justified there, of, you know, it being set in a world and that last sort of 10%. There's almost something about that with Fallout, in that they are clearly fans of this world. And, you know, just the amount of stuff that they shoved in there and the amount of care and attention to detail they took in transposing that game world into a TV show is really evident just throughout the entire thing, from anything from the sort of set decoration. Like there are pictures that are on the walls, which are pictures from the game, you know, that you can put up yourself when you're building things in the game and stuff. Tiny little things like the heads up display in the power armor is basically the user interface from the game. The Grunach, the Barbarian TV show and comic books, the Tesla Science magazine, yeah, you know, all the props and stuff that they use, and even the food, the sort of Nuka-Cola, sugar bombs, deviled eggs, all that sort of stuff, which is integrated into it. And then even things like the game mechanics, like the perk system and the VAT system, whilst they don't specifically mention any of that because they're game mechanics, there is that big fight sequence where the ghoul is in Philly, and the way that that plays out, it's like, well, that looks like he's using the bloody mess perk, because every time he shoots somebody, basically they explode. He is incredibly accurate, and it's just, there are little things that feel like they're part of the game.
Yeah, and even going before that, in the first episode, where Ellie is giving her big spiel of why she should qualify for the wedding, she's basically reading off her character sheet.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are so many bits and pieces throughout it which just are part of the game mechanics. I mean, my history with the game, I played the first two a little bit, but I really sort of jumped in at Fallout 3 and then played New Vegas and 4, and I have played a little bit around with Fallout 76 as well. So, I've really, since it's been in sort of 3D more, I have played some of the earlier ones, but not for a very, very long time, and I don't think I actually completed them. But I completed the others, obviously, other than 76, but I completed the other games. So just the way that they've managed to transpose so much of the game elements and the overall world into this and make it work. And like you say, they have this advantage that there is no central character. They're basically just handed this world and said, build something within this. I thought it was very clever in that they set it sort of after everything else. So they're not tied to having to really line too much up. And I mean, there is the thing about, like you say, the Shady Sands bit, and there's some argument about where that should be and whether the dates were correct and all that sort of thing, you know. So there is that. I do wonder whether they might address that in the second season a little bit, but there's all that sort of stuff going on as well, and it's sort of the setup for it almost plays like a game, because she's given this quest to go and find her father, and then gets sidetracked by side quests throughout the entire series of like needing to go and do something else, either to advance her main quest or because somebody needs help with something, which is exactly like the game, you know. So I think they got the essence of it so well. It's just really well done. And then adding to the lore on top of that with, I mean, the big thing being the sort of the Vault-Tec conspiracy bit, which, you know, of the all the companies kind of working together, and you get that sort of explanation of why everything is so screwed up in all the vaults, there is a reason for that, and that's never been entirely apparent in the game world, But it, you know, we now know that it was because they basically did a deal to allow people to experiment from all the different companies, you know. So I thought that was an interesting little layer that they added to the game lore in there as well. So yeah, I mean, I just think it's so well done. It doesn't give you the emotion that you get with something like The Last of Us, obviously, because it is a very different sort of game. But it gets the humor and it gets the idea of it, and really perfectly, I think, puts that world across. So
see, that's where things were kind of interesting to me, because obviously I was expecting to be emotionally responsive towards Last of Us because all those obvious reasons. With Fallout, I wasn't sure what to think, and with Twisted Metal, I was literally sitting there thinking, okay, this is going to be a dumb, fun, popcorn flick action show, and it does like start out like that with this like car chase thing. I was like, oh yeah, this is probably what this show is going to be, and got a lot deeper than what I thought it was even capable of doing. And even though you've just said about like, okay, it doesn't get that sort of emotionally deep, what I again find strange is that out of those three shows, Twisted Metal had the least to work with, this had some more to work with, just not like a main character, and then Last of Us obviously had the material of the games anyway. But I was more emotionally, say, responsive, whatever the word you want to use, to Twisted Metal than I was to this. Maybe because it surprised me more than I thought that this was going to. But that again, particularly because, like I said, with Walton Goggins' performance stands out here. But where you've got like Stephanie, I think Beatrice is her name, her character in Quiet, she's called, in Twisted Metal, like she really kind of brought that home in that performance, which really helped the storyline that she was involved in. I just never really kind of see this was neither to me a sort of remotely deep TV show for its like story or themes. I mean, obviously there's the themes of like, you know, the state of the world and things like that, like, okay, people are dying, resources, etc., etc., that sort of classic post-apocalyptic thing, but none of it made me remotely emotional. And I would also not say, because Robert, you kind of described this a little bit of sort of not the popcorn flick thing, but more casual. I think it's almost banging between those two things. It's definitely not what I would describe as like a popcorn flick, and it's not something that's, it's a drama, dramatic things happen, but it's in this like weird middle spot where I thought it could have either pushed on further or been more of a popcorn flick, which made me just sit in this middle thing of like, okay, this is good. It's not really pulling me in, but it's not silly fun either, which I just...
Yeah, it definitely had a hard job of straddling the line between how much fan service do we do and how much do we do to make sure the people that aren't really that deep into, I mean, even video games. Like, I've recommended this show to a couple of friends that don't like video games. I'm like, hey, it's a post-apocalyptic world and cool shit happens. So, and going off of what you said with the actors, I think my favorite part was watching people that I only know from like one really small thing getting to see them in something else, like Leslie Uggams, who you know as Blind Al from the Deadpool movies. She got a lot of screen time. And then Zach Cherry, who plays Woody Thomas, the dude with the really big thick beard, was one of the three guys running for overseer in Vault 76. I was kept watching the show. I was like, why do I know that guy? Why do I know that guy? Why do I know that guy? And I finally break down, go into IMDb. He was the dude that was doing the play-by-play commentary on the bus fight in Shang-Chi. And I was like, that's where I know that dude.
Nice. I think we've seen him recently in, he was in Severance as well, wasn't he? I think.
Yeah, he was. He did a few episodes of Severance.
Yeah. So, a couple of things I was surprised by as well. Not necessarily this was bad, but whatever, but like slight disappointments. One thing I almost didn't notice the show wasn't doing until it did do it, which was in about episode, I want to say 6 or 7. I would say barely used the score. I don't remember hearing the score until there was a scene where I think Lucy is looking at some armor, and then the Fallout score sort of kicks in. And I, it was this weird thing where I hadn't noticed the series not using it, because I thought, oh, they might use it for an intro like that, how Last of Us did or something, or like Halo does it as well. Like they, you get a look at Master Chief or whatever it is, with and without the suit, and it sort of plays the Halo theme. But like they did, because they did have, they had like the credit bits at the end where you sort of saw the desolated world and things, and it was usually just a song of some kind. But I was surprised they really did, because that's really a kind of one that almost works like the same way the battle music in Final Fantasy VII works. Like, it really sort of kicks you into a scene and really gets things, like, you know, exciting, whatever. So I thought they might have used that with more of the battle, or more, or even just the sort of, you know, where a character's walking through the wasteland and you get an overhead shot, you could maybe have played it there or something. So I was very surprised they didn't use it, but I hadn't thought of it until they played it in the episode, and I was like, oh, where has this been, kind of thing. The other thing, which I don't know how you would have used more of it, because it is a very video gamey part, and obviously the Pip Boys are used in the series, and obviously there's the whole thing with Cooper Howard, the ghoul, going on as well. I thought they might use them a little bit more in the series, but I suppose the thing is with that, because you're using that in the game to sort of browse your own equipment, it doesn't make sense where, yeah, okay, a character in a third person shot rather than a first person thing where you've got a camera that's got multiple people on screen. It would be weird if, like, let's say the ghoul, for example, let's say he was using a rifle and then looked at his pit boy and then it zoomed in on that and then clicked on the pistol and then zoomed out and then he pulls his pistol out. You just simply have a scene where he puts his rifle on his back or whatever and gets a pistol out. So I kind of understand that, but it was cool that they were in the series and things. But
yeah, and I mean, I think they used the pit boys in an appropriate way for the show. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I yeah, because they are such an integral part of the game. Mm. But I think and I think for the TV show they used it in an appropriate way, in that Lucy uses it as a map, which is essentially what it is. I mean, you do get a shot of her. There is sort of her little brother playing the asteroid game on it. There is a shot of him doing that at one point. So, you know, they have made nods to it, and she is using it in the way that a Pip-Boy would be used, mainly, which is as a map and maybe to check vital statistics, you know. And it's not like people out in the wilderness would have them, you know. It's not like the ghoul would have one, you know. It's something which the vault dwellers have. Mm. So it does make sense in the way that they used it. I think if you'd pushed too much into the game element of that, that would have really pulled people out of it. I think this goes back to what I was saying, is I think, you know, they've made references to things like, you know, the VAT system and the perk system and that sort of stuff. You can see bits of it without them out and out sort of fully referencing it, which I think is one of the things that did really, really well. And on the music side of things, I think it was when she lifts up the NCR flag when she's in the other vault, and
yeah, she's in the
music, in the sort of classroom, and the music kicks in. It's interesting because the guy who is the composer for all the games wasn't the composer for the TV show. They went, they went with one of the biggest names in TV composing, which is Ramin Djawadi, who did Game of Thrones and Westworld and Three Body Problem and Jack Ryan and a million other things. That's the person that they went to for this. And then interspersed it with stuff from the Fallout soundtrack, like, you know, I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire and that sort of stuff. I know what you're saying, but I also think you kind of, maybe they took the point of view that they wanted to be fairly sparing with how they were using it in here. So I don't know, maybe they could have used it a bit more, but the music's great for it. I mean, it always is when you've got a composer like Ramin doing it. But I don't know. It's yeah, they possibly could have pushed that a little bit more throughout.
It was just funny though that I weirdly wasn't looking out, because that's not really a song, because there's like songs from games and stuff that I listen to from time to time, and that's not really one that's on my mind, so I wasn't actually looking. Like, if they, it's weird, because let's say they hadn't used that score at all, I probably wouldn't have even like noticed that. Oh yeah, no, the thing's not coming up. But then it came up so many episodes later, I was like, oh, this is in here. Yeah, so yeah. I mean, it doesn't like, you know, break the series or whatever. I just thought they might use that slightly more. So
I mean, in terms generally of the other stuff, that I mean, the amount of Easter eggs and bits and pieces that they threw in, I just thought was really nicely subtly done. I mean, there's a thing about the water chip breaking in the vault, which, you know, they're talking about how the water isn't working, which was the actual quest that sent the original vault trailer in the very first Fallout game out into the wilderness, was the water chip breaking in the vault. So there's little things like that, and, you know, just using the hacking screens as well, when they're using the consoles. And I just think they did a wonderful job adding a lot of that sort of stuff in, and creating that world. And I thought the costuming was really good. The power armor looked great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's, and you got to see some of the weird screwed up stuff from the vaults. I mean, they left it in a very interesting place as well, because we get that shot of New Vegas at the end as well.
Yeah, and that's going to be really interesting, because Todd Howard has come out and said that everything that happens in the show is canon. There's a little, like I said before, there's a little couple of things that are a little out of place, but not so much big. But the thing with the game New Vegas, and this is actually one of the bigger problems that I had with that game, is that there were so many faction endings. There's what, 5 or 6? Because you had Do It Yourself, back Mr. House, back the NCR, back Caesar's Legion. And there's a couple others that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Obviously, in the show, Caesar, NCR is wiped out, or at least in that area wiped out. So more than likely, that's not going to be the canon ending going into season 2, which begs the question, what are they going to consider the official canon ending for New Vegas?
Yeah, that is an interesting conundrum they've got to try and work out, because, I mean, yes, it's not going to necessarily ruin anything that happened in the video game, but they're obviously, this is a linear thing, so they do need to pick one particular route, presumably, unless they come up with some very interesting sort of alternate way of doing it. But yeah, I mean, the whole Mr. House thing as well, we did actually, that was interesting. We did see in that meeting where Vault-Tec meets with all the other heads, we did actually see Mr. House in there, because he was one of the executives. So yeah, I mean, I don't know whether he's gonna show up again or whether we're gonna do something with that, but yeah, there's a lot to the to play around with when they get to that New Vegas side of things. And, you know, I'm intrigued to see where they go with it for a second season.
Cool. So it seems like we're leaning a little bit towards the spoiler section. So should we take a break and do all that business and go to the spoilers? Unless either of you have got anything else?
Yeah, no, let's go.
Cool. All right, let's take a break, come back, do housekeeping in just a second. So basically, after the break that we're going to take, we're going to jump into the spoilers. So this is your first warning, I suppose, if you've not seen Fallout on Amazon Prime Video streaming thingamajiggy. See you in a minute. All right, recently on Gaming Talk, which we've mentioned a few times here, which is myself and Robert, this week's episode, we talked about the EAFC, the new FIFA game, basically, it's called FC24, the team of the season, which had some interesting choices and also players that were left out. So that's covering both the men's and the women's football selections. So obviously the best players from the season, And they've revealed those players. Those players, by the way, you're supposed to be able to actually get in Ultimate Team. I don't play Ultimate Team, so I don't know how that works. But you can go and get those cards for Team of the Season. We also talked about Resident Evil a little bit and horror and what Resident Evil should or could do. And we also had some news about the upcoming Xbox showcase in the summer. So we did some small predictions for that. And me and Robert from that would very much like to know where State of Decay 3 is. So we'll see what comes from that. Speaking of reviews of stuff, over on the film review side of things, the first of the year, I did technically a double film review. You could really just wedge these two films together. A possible skip review for Rebel Moon Parts 1 and 2. Basically, the three ratings I gave were Part 1's a must-see, Part 2 is a skip because it's a weird, just such a strange film, the Part 2. And then possible skip for the entire experience. We do know that we're possibly going to get 6 films if Zach does that, although we could get 12 if each of them get a director's extended cut, so we'll see what happens with all that. I dread to think what the second film looks like as a longer version, but anyway, that's Rebel Moon Parts 1 and 2 over on Netflix. Over on, speaking of some sci-fi stuff, and yes, I haven't put out my Star Trek podcast yet this week, I will do that after this is posted. We're up to season 5, episode 5, technically episode 6, but I haven't done that one yet. I haven't even watched the episode yet. I will do that after this. But Star Trek Discovery, discovering Star Trek week to week. Just to quickly ask, David, have you seen this week's episode?
I haven't yet. I'm watching it tonight, so...
Cool. So there's that. Over on the United cast, things have been scary recently. I didn't cover the newest game because I had my own birthday dinner to go to. But recently, the game before that, we beat Sheffield United by 4-2. Again, things were very scary over there. Things were even more scarier in the semi-final of the FA Cup. We are in the final against Manchester City in, it's the end of this month, 25th. We were beating Coventry by 3-0. Then suddenly it was 3-3. Then it was very nearly 4-3, millimeter offside goal. Then we had to take them all the way to penalties, beat them 4-2. We got the job done, I guess. So we're in the final, which is the thing that matters, to play against Manchester City. Speaking of football and my birthday, I did a special birthday episode recently. It's called The History of Sir Matt Busby. For those of you that don't know, the reason I'm called Matt is because I am named after Sir Matt Busby, which feels very, very lucky of me to be named after him. So I went over his history, of course, the Munich disaster and stuff, the Busby Babes, him giving us our first European trophy, and many league titles as well. So good stuff over there for the late, great Sir Matt Busby. Over on Gaming Talk recently as well, we talked about Crash Bandicoot 4 sales, COD versus X Defiant, and the Suicide Squad. And speaking just lastly on my Twisted Metal Season 1 review, that was recently as well. I gave that a must-see rating for that. That's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. This is your second and last spoiler warning. Go and watch Fallout Season 1. It's not short, by the way, but go and watch it and then come back here. So, David, I'll hand back over to you. Where do you want to start with this spoiler section?
Okay, well, let's start with you. Any particular favourite bits of the show?
There's a couple of bits that are jumping out. This isn't one of them, to me, where I'm doing the spoiler section, so the spoiler-free section, and then I know I'm going to immediately jump on something for the spoiler section. But you mentioned a few times the, let's say, craftiness that was going on with the vaults, and you do get Norm, who goes down there eventually and has many things revealed to him and those sorts of things. It's interesting with his character, because you don't see him loads at the start, and you see him a lot at the end of the season, as obviously that storyline starts building up. And because there is a period of maybe episodes 3 to 5-ish, you know, that sort of early part of the season where you aren't actually spending that much time in that vault, which when we went back to those characters, I was like, oh yeah, they're here. But then I kind of wanted to just go back to Walton Goggins doing his thing. He was a bit of a strange character to me, because okay, you've got him as the brother there, you've obviously got the mum, and the dad, and you've got Lucy is supposed to be our main character. She obviously is for the overall plot and through line, the whole find your dad thing. But it's weird with Norm, because like, we went back to him to sort of start kicking off that storyline. Obviously there was the voting for the vault dweller leader and that sort of thing. And it's like, I sort of was not really invested in him, and then was I was invested in the thing that he was doing, which is trying to research, because obviously you see him go through the vaults previously with that friend of his, and things started to get a bit interesting, and then that woman asked them where they'd been, and they had to kind of be, you know, sly about it and stuff. So I enjoyed the storyline of what he was doing, but the actual character was very sort of just, I was like, okay, you're the main character's brother, which gives you significance, but you're not like standing out at all. But the storyline was, and it's almost like you could almost have given that storyline to a different character, and then it wouldn't have. I don't know. I enjoyed the storyline itself, and when it unraveled itself, and then when you saw the little head in the jar thing wheeling itself around, and he tried to prick him with the needle, which I thought was a bit funny. It's funny when like the Norm's walking forward, he's like shocked by this discovery. You've got this little robot behind him, the needle's still out. It's like, are you gonna give up on that, put that away? You're still planning on stunning him or whatever? And he's just like amazed by this reveal of the vault. So I thought that was quite an interesting way to do that, I guess. What did you think of the vault storyline there?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, yeah. Because, and I think the reason why they gave it to that character is because through the whole thing, they set him up as a do nothing. You know, he was, mm-hmm. you know, effing about on his pit boy during the dinner.
Yeah.
He had to get his sister to save him during the big fight scene. And now he's put in this position of, do I just pretend I don't see anything, or do I actually do something? So I think the earlier setup of him not doing anything and then having to have that character growth of doing something, that mirrored Ellie's growth of being monumentally naive going out into the wasteland, and her transformation into, okay, this is how I have to be in this world. So I think they were trying to set up like just a parallel arc in terms of the you know, the emotional range and character strength that they needed to do that. One obviously being, you know, real life and death danger, and the other one is get murdered in my sleep or get murdered by a brain in a jar on a robot leg.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really like that sort of storyline because it shows you how screwed up, you know, that particular vault was, even though it was less screwed up than a lot of the vaults we've seen in the video games.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, much less screwed up than that. But they are still messing with people. You know, you've got what are essentially, you know, this three vault system where you had, you know, one vault which was full of the sort of overlords, essentially the architects of this entire thing, and these are the two vaults who were unwittingly there to basically be their servants, and you know how that was managed. And I thought that was a really interesting idea of setting that up. And you know, you have the one vault sort of revolt, and you know, the other one are incredibly naive to exactly what's going on. I'm with you, Robert. I liked that sort of mirroring of that arc. I think that worked quite well for Norm as a character. You know, because you do, you know, he starts off as the sort of work shy, lazy, doesn't want to do anything sort of, you know, guy, and ends up being forced into this position of having to do something. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed that. The other bit I liked was the outside of the vaults, the whole sort of Brotherhood of Steel thing, adding the squires in that carry those ridiculously oversized bags, which is, again, I think is another nod to the game mechanics in that, you know, people hoard lots of stuff and carry it around, yeah, and will dump it on their followers.
Pick up and everything, and just in case you need it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll sort of dump it on the followers. And I think that was a really funny way of adding that kind of thing to it, you know, of a nod to the fact that people hoard things in that game. I thought that was a really great little sort of bit that they put into it as well. It's just so well constructed, I think. And, you know, the casting just across the show, I thought was really great. I thought Aaron Morton was really good as Maximus. Ella Pinnell as Lucy is really sort of, plays the naive side of it very well. And then the flip works
Some okie dokie memes going around.
Oh, yeah. She's already been interviewed on that. She's like, I can't help it anymore. I say it no matter what I do. Okie dokie.
Carl McLaughlin as Hank, I think, was a really good bit of casting because he does that sort of twist from being the kind of wholesome, caring dad to being basically fairly evil.
Remember that one weird episode of How I Met Your Mother when he was on that for a brief stretch? They actually had like a painted portrait of him, and then they would move it to where they would only show his eyes, and then they would move it again to where it only showed his mouth. And then one of them, he looked like happy-go-lucky, and the other one, he looked like really, really sinister. That reminded me of that.
I'm just trying to think back to that now, yeah.
Yes, it's been a while since I've seen that, but yes, that's really good.
One bit of casting I thought was quite curious is you got Michael Emerson in here. I was trying to find him in this list. There's loads of people here. Michael Emerson is Wilzig, who was in just a couple of episodes, or it says one episode here. And it was interesting because I remember when one of the trailers came out and he was in it, and I was like, oh, it's Ben from Lost. That's really cool. I know he's been in a few things since Lost. Yeah, that's the main thing I kind of remember him. He was brilliant in that. It's like, oh, cool, we got him in here. He's a really, really good actor. I know what he's capable of, and it'll be great to have him in here. And then he kind of gets into a bit of an accident, and then Lucy has to carry his head around. So I thought that was both surprising and I'd say disappointing, but only because I wanted to see him in the show more because I like the actor so much. I think he's just absolutely brilliant. But him having the dog companion I thought was quite great, and then he just unfortunately comes across the ghoul and things very quickly go to shit. I thought that whole scene in the market was, or if you call it the market, whatever, the little town scene, I thought that was all quite good. Then he gets his leg shot off, and then he gets like it's funny when that woman brought the box over. She's like, oh, where's the box of feet? And I'm like, what is this going to look like or lead to? And then they just shove this metal foot onto the bottom of his leg. When someone says something like that in full, like they say, oh, where's the box of feet? You're like, okay, well, what's that foot going to look like and how is this going to work? Because it could have been, you know, you're in the wasteland. This could be anything. I honestly thought they might like have a person's foot that they then like stitch on, or who knows what might have happened there. The actual mechanic of that I thought was quite good, even though it led to a lot of bleeding. But this like metal foot that gets stuck on the bottom of you, and you kind of go forward with that. But that was all. That was his part in the show was all really, really quite good, even if it was unfortunately quite short.
Yeah, and in the same vein, I think my biggest upset was that they killed off Lady Moldova. I mean, obviously they can fill in her backstory with flashbacks, but that lack of resolution between her and Walter Goggins' ghoul character of, oh, we knew each other back then, how are you here now and not a ghoul?
Yeah.
That I had a lot of interest in. And without it being able to go forward in the timeline, I think it's going to, whatever they do as a flashback is just going to kind of lose the weight to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they're interesting little things like that. I mean, the casting throughout, I thought was really kind of interesting because you had these like weird little cameos from people like Michael Emerson, Michael Rapaport as well. Who turned up as Titus the Knight, who, you know, he's a reasonably big name and was in for like one episode, and most of that episode he was underneath the knight armor, so you didn't know who it was. So I thought that was quite good. Matt Barrett.
Yeah, he went a bit stupid online with a few things, which is probably why you haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, I wondered because I didn't know he was going to be in this show, and I because I'm aware of the things he said and all that. And I was like, huh, I wonder if you're going to be in this for very long. Not because of that specific, like they could have got rid of him in season two or whatever, but I was like, okay, I wonder because this was probably filmed before those things happened. And I was like, huh, I wonder like where your character will end up, and you know, what
yeah,
wasn't
I mean,
very
it's
long,
not
so.
It's not TJ Miller. Get drunk, get on a train, and then call in a bomb threat because you're pissed at somebody kind of level of stupid, but it was up there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, he's gone anyway, so.
Yes. And you have Matt Berry show up as well, who's a reasonably well-known British star, who is was the voice of, like, Snip-Snip and Mr.
Oh,
Handy.
He's brilliant. That was brilliant, yeah.
But we also got to sort of see that backstory of, like, you know, the fact that this sort of English actor that's lent his, you know, sold the rights to his voice to this company to use in the robots, which I thought was really cool, you know. So, yeah,
he
I mean, there was...
from IT Crowd, isn't he? And lots of other stuff as well. So
yeah, I mean, he's been in loads of different things. So
I thought it was weirdly quite, even though you knew it wasn't going to happen, the bit where he's just like, I'm just going to harvest your organs, and then like puts her to sleep, and that sort did get very, very close to her. And like, okay, you can't really kill her off here, so what are you going to do with that? But I thought that was a good translation and stuff. But he is one of them actors, as good as he is at his, you know, general acting, he's got one of them particular voices. So it was good to see both sides anyway, you know, the little prequel part of that. Because I think he said to the Ghoul at the time, he's like, hey, this is like the future of stuff. And he's, you know, said about selling his voice and things. And then you see that translated later. I thought that was quite good. I thought that whole scene in the supermarket was quite great as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I like that scene. And I mean, you've also got this sort of interesting thing with Thaddeus, who was the squire of Maximus, and, you know, takes that odd potion thing and then gets
that
shot
was brilliant.
Through the neck. And yeah. He's like, so, but there's sort of some suggestion of, well, is he now a ghoul? Or the other possibility is he going to, is it the serum that turns people into super mutants?
Yeah, the FEV, the forced evolutionary virus.
Yeah.
Which is what created the super mutants.
Because that is something they avoided for the most part in, you know, I mean, obviously that we've had the company that created it. It sort of popped up here and there, and there is some suggestion that maybe the Emerson's character possibly worked for West Tech, I think, wasn't it, that made the virus. You know, but it's whether we're maybe going to have him show up as a super mutant later on, or whether they're going to bring that into the second season somewhere. That's sort of something that they held back. I mean, there were a few things that they held back because Death Claws we didn't have either. We saw a Death Claws skull, but that was it.
It would be interesting to see those, like, I'll just call them bigger infected or whatever. And that does kind of remind me of when is it the bloater? I always forget which one is which in Last of Us. There's the bloater and there's the other one, and that obviously showed up in that episode. And again, that's that interesting kind of, especially with something like that, that's not just to kind of, oh, let's translate this costume into an outfit which a actor can wear on screen. That's kind of all this other work. So it would be curious to see, because I kind of forgot about some of those things, like the Deathclaw and the other big mutants and things. Again, I've only played the one game, and it was a while ago. So I would be curious to see, again, the translation of that to live action. But given how well they did that throughout the whole series, I think they'll be all right with doing that. So that could be quite good.
I mean, it is going to be interesting moving forward, you know, assuming this goes on for multiple seasons. I mean, obviously, they're looking at New Vegas for next season. I do wonder if they're then, if it then becomes a bit more of a sort of stepped through some of the other places as well. I mean, New Vegas, obviously, is set in California, so New Vegas is obviously fairly close in terms of, you know, a next step.
I think LA to Las Vegas It's like a 4 hour drive, I think.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I've done that drive. It's actually, yeah, it's something like 4 hours, I think. So it's not too bad. I do wonder whether they're going to work out some way of maybe, you know, each season you end up visiting one of the locations of some of the older games. It would be an interesting thing to see.
Las Vegas to DC or Boston, that's a 19, 22-hour drive
on a
good highway system.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether that, I mean, they have got the sort of Brotherhood of Steel. I mean, you could use the Brotherhood of Steel kind of infrastructure in some way, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got the copters and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know whether there is some way of doing that moving forward.
Well, supposedly, the airship that we see fly in is the airship from Fallout 4. It has the same name, so people are assuming it's the same one.
Yeah.
But since we don't really have, like, a hard definitive timeline, we don't know where it lands, where the show lands in terms of, we're assuming it's after the events of New Vegas. And I can't remember off the timeline how far ahead or behind 4 is from New Vegas. But yeah, that's one of those things that they could do it, but they'd have to do like a time skip. Because unless they commandeered that the Brotherhood of Steel ship, that journey with what is there tech-wise, minimum a month. If they had to trek it on foot, minimum 6 months. Because people forget, unless you live over here in the States, most people don't really process just how big this area is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've been here a few times.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that the easiest way I can mention it is that the longest continuous road in the U.S. is basically 5 full laps of the M1. And it's still a little bit more than that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it is enormous. I mean, you know, I mean, America isn't really one country. It's a collection of smaller countries. I mean,
yeah, it's a dozen biomes. It's basically Minecraft.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think it is supposedly set sort of after everything else. I mean, you know, so it would just be an interesting sort of thing that to go back and maybe revisit some of the other areas. I mean, there is also the possibility that they get to a point of going, okay, we've done what we can with this story, and you could essentially turn it into an anthology series and sort of start again.
Goes back to the faction things, because I know, I can't remember all of them, but I know at least if you do the Institute faction ending, that destroys the Brotherhood of Steel's airship. And I think there's another one, because again, Fallout 4's got a ton of them. You got the Brotherhood, you got the Institute, you got technically the Minutemen, that don't really fall into anything, and there's, you know, do it all by yourself, don't need any of them, so it'll be, a couple of them definitely involves that Penguin getting destroyed, so we'll have to see what becomes officially official.
I can't remember which one I did pick in Fallout 4, it was a long time ago.
I've played that game a few times, so I've probably done all the endings at various points, so...
Mm. Yeah. So seeing as you guys are speculating about like locations and where this could go and things, how many before we do actually potentially do what David said, which is like the anthology thing, and you could literally just switch to different characters because that's something you could probably do in this. Regarding like, let's say this set of characters in this series, how many seasons do you think you could actually get out of this?
The thing is, I don't, given where they've left things in the, Lucy is now not really beholden to the vault and things are going wrong in her vault anyway. There's no reason for her necessarily to go back there because she came out to rescue her father And I mean, she could just go back and live in the vault, but given what she's seen outside of it, would she want to do that at this point? So I think you can just continue coming up with stories that either take these characters on to different destinations, or I don't see any reason why you couldn't keep this going for as many seasons as you wanted. I mean, I think, you know, how many you actually end up doing, I don't know, five maybe, but I honestly don't know. I don't think story wise there isn't, it's not like, because it's set after everything else, you're not having to hit a particular point. So I don't see any real restriction with it at the moment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And especially when it came out as strong as it did, in the first 2 weeks it had 65 million viewers, which basically crushes anything streaming. It was second only to Rings of Power for Amazon shows, and I'd be willing to bet that it absolutely crushed Rings of Power's completion rate, because I don't know if you ever saw that article, but yeah. They released some stats, and I think the number was like 30% of the people, 37% of the people that watched Rings of Power actually finished it. And I'd be willing to bet that number is a lot higher for Fallout, even with the reduced number of episodes.
Yeah.
So obviously we know we're getting a second season. I wouldn't blink if they just went until it stopped being popular, because it's definitely bringing in the views. It's, you know, already number two in terms of their most popular show. I don't know if they can match the success for season two, if we're going to have a, you know, a sophomore slump, as they like to call it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I see a minimum four seasons unless there's a major organizational shakeup at Amazon Video.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. I don't see that really happening with Amazon. You know, you are talking about a country that has, you know, a company that has more money than a small country. So, you know, it's one of those things that if they want to just throw money at it to draw eyes to it, you can throw money at it.
What they've been doing. They threw money at the Michael Jordan shoe documentary, and they threw money at The Peripheral, which I liked, but it wasn't nearly as well received as they were.
Yeah,
hoping.
I liked it as well. Yeah, it's a shame that I didn't get more eyes on it, because I thought that was a really good show.
I think it was an interesting take on time travel.
Yes, yeah, I thought that was a really, really interesting show, and it was such a shame that that didn't go further. But, it's a bit like Apple. I mean, they have the same point of view. I mean, Apple, as I said before, it produces some very, very high-quality stuff, but Apple TV in and of itself doesn't make any money. It probably loses the money. But
most of these streaming services don't make any money.
Well, exactly. You know, but Apple, you know, put that out there because it draws people into their ecosystem, and it's the same for Prime. You know, it draws people towards the Amazon ecosystem, and that's what they want it for. You know,
do you think it's because I was thinking, like, okay, will you do three seasons? Maybe if you can maybe get to five, will you do more than, because more than five is, like, you know, really getting into some territory. But I'm kind of genuinely wondering, because of the reception of even just Walton Goggins' character, like, could you do it to where even if just he sticks around, people will just kind of keep tuning in?
Story-wise, you could probably work that out. I mean, Ellie, you know, might have to go back to the vault, and then you could kind of keep her in a storyline, but in more like, I run this shit now kind of a storyline.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, there are so many directions you could potentially go in it. I mean, we know where they're going for the second season because they showed it at the end of the first. But after that, if you wanted to, you know, if Ella Pennell decided she wanted to go off and do something else, I don't know how many she's been signed up for, but if she didn't want to come back, there is no reason why you couldn't mix it up and, you know, take some of the characters and tell a different story based in the same world, because it is its own story. So, you know, it would just be like a different video game, you know, another edition of a video game. You know, there is no reason why you can't just sit something in this world and carry on. So, I see no reason why this can't continue in one form or another for as long as it's popular and they want to do it.
Even if you just start doing spin-offs that just take place in different parts or something. So,
well, exactly. You know, there are so many things you could do with it.
Yeah, I'm on her IMDb page, and there's only really three things that she's linked to as an upcoming, and none of them are really time-pressing. She's revisiting Jinx in Arcane. Looks like she's got her character coming back in Army of the Dead, and God, that movie was awful. And then there's something called Sweet Pea, which I don't know anything about. It's just a placeholder thing.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So has anybody got anything else they want to mention for this?
No, I mean, other than I'm looking forward to the next season. And, you know, I think they did a phenomenal job with the first one. Really, really outstanding. And I can't wait to see more of it. So,
yeah, as long as they keep the writing and the storytelling on point, like they did with the first one, they didn't try to delve too much into, you know, taking this idea and then just, oh, we're going to turn this into a giant club and beat you over the head with it, like I've seen way too many shows do. As long as they avoid that, you know, that should be pretty... I'm in. I can't wait for the second season.
Yeah.
Me too. All right. Well, that was, I think, our review of the season one of Fallout, which we enjoyed. Go and watch it, of course, and all that kind of stuff. Go and play the games. I think they're all on sale in different parts. I did see, you know, after our podcast the other day, Robert, I did go and check New Vegas on the Xbox store, and I think it's like £8, which I think is quite a good price. So that's the one I might delve into next, and we'll see what goes on from there. But yes, if any of you have any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments about our thoughts on Fallout, your thoughts on Fallout, any of the games or the show, or how long it could last, etc., etc., Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter eTalkUK, and his information in your show notes, including two email boxes. You only need to use one, but they're there as well. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org, TV, games, films, Monday Night podcasts. So look out for what we're doing at the moment, Star Trek podcast later, all that kind of stuff, so look out for that. If you want to support us in different ways, of course, you can listen to more episodes. There's a ton of them. Use the menus, use the search option, all that kind of stuff, so check out what we've got. Word of mouth, social media, let other people know about what we're doing and where they can find it. And if someone mentions something we podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options for that as well. David, you run geektown.co.uk and Geektown Radio. So what's going on over there?
Well, we're hurtling towards what we refer to as the bloodbath period at the end of next week, which is when all the cancellations and renewals for the US networks should have come in before they do their upfronts, which is where they sell things to advertisers. So there's lots of renewals and cancellations floating around right now. So there's all that sort of stuff. We've also got quite a lot of UK news kicking around at the moment. So that's been going up on the site, and the podcast is obviously still going. So Matt was on this week. We talked about the video game Manor Lords, a bit about Clarkson's Farm, Dead Boy Detectives, Red Eye, which is a really good new ITV drama, and Hollyoaks we talked about this week as well, which is something we don't usually cover, but you know, Matt wanted to talk about it, so we talked about it. But yeah, so you can find Geektown Radio wherever you normally get your podcasts. That is out right now.
Excellent. Go and check that out. Geektown.co.uk and Geektown Radio Tuesdays. Look out for all of that. Bex is still on hiatus at the moment. You can check out content she's already done in the past, because a lot of it's still out there. Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Tristet, BYTES. So go, still going, you know, press the follow subscribe buttons. They're all called different things these days, but just press the buttons that you know that you're supposed to in that way. So follow and subscribe and all that kind of stuff. For us, speaking of follow and subscribe buttons, Twitch, eTalk UK, that's for the Xbox streams. Just again, find us on there, press the follow button. YouTube, which you have to press a bell for as well, because, well, I don't make those rules, but Entertainment Talk Players over on YouTube, basically just follow and subscribe to both of those. So that's Entertainment Talk Players on YouTube, and Twitch, eTalk UK, that's for all of our video game stuff, so check out that. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.